Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now this week's host, Terry Cavanaugh.
It's 8:14. I'm Terry Cavanaugh in our second hour on our Ask the Expert Hour here on WGIL's Galesburg Live. We're going to talk with Jesse Hodiern. Jesse is a staff attorney for Prairie State Legal Services and offers legal help for homeowners, specifically foreclosure. So we'll talk about Prairie State a little bit and give you a little background there before we dive into the foreclosure process and housing issues. But Jesse, good morning. Welcome to the program, and nice to have you with us. And my understanding is you've got a little bit of family history here in the community as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, thanks for having me this morning. My family, my parents both grew up in Galesburg, went to Galesburg High School, and my grandfather was a dentist throughout his life and practiced out of the Bondi building. So yeah, I'm familiar with Galesburg and have a little bit of history here.
Yeah, you sure do. All right. And I'm sure some people probably recognize, as Rex did when I said yeah. Who was going to be here. Rex says, that name's familiar
to me. The last name
me.
Helps stick out in people's minds.
So. There you go. Well, tell us a little bit about Prairie State, which serves many counties, including Knox. Mm-hmm. Give us a little overview of the services offered there, Jesse.
Sure. Well, Prairie State Legal Services is a nonprofit law firm. We offer free civil legal services to low-income individuals and senior citizens. We have about 12 offices located in the northern half of Illinois, and we cover about 36 counties. The goal of Prairie State is really to help ensure equal access to justice and fair treatment under the law. And to accomplish those goals, we concentrate on about three overarching types of cases. The first being safety cases involving cases of domestic violence, orders of protection, elder abuse and exploitation. The second category involves public benefits, everything from SNAP benefits, wrongful termination of those benefits or the wrongful denial of those benefits, Medicaid, disability, VA, unemployment benefits. And the third overarching category of cases that we focus on involve housing, everything from wrongful evictions, habitability issues with your landlord, contract for deed scams, nursing home discharges, housing discrimination, and then last but not least, my expertise, which is mortgage foreclosure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's where we're going to begin. As we go through the program, if you have a question about foreclosure, probably can't get real specific, but we'll try to answer that. Jesse will, or put you in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's define foreclosure first, Jesse. What are we talking about?
Well, in Illinois, what we're talking about is a judicial process, a court process that the mortgage company uses to really buy back the house if you've defaulted on the mortgage or the payments for the loan. It's a pretty lengthy process in Illinois because it is a judicial process. From start to finish, really about the quickest a foreclosure could end from start to finish is 8 or 9 months from when you're actually served with court documents to when the homeowner would actually have to be out of the property. So generally speaking, that's what a foreclosure is, just the bank's process to retake the home.
Mm-hmm. And what does that process look like? Can you give us a bit of a timeline on it? When it would start? In other words, I'm getting letters from my lenders. Is that how it starts?
Yeah. There are several notices that the lender is required to provide the homeowner prior to even filing foreclosure. Some new federal regulations prohibit a lender from even filing foreclosure unless the loan is 120 days delinquent. But once it gets to that point, the loan is then referred to the bank's attorney for foreclosure. The attorney begins the legal process, drafting a complaint alleging why the bank is allowed to foreclose. Once that is filed with the court issues what's called a summons, and the homeowner is then served by the sheriff with that summons saying you have to go to court, you have to respond within 30 days. That's really the way the foreclosure court process begins, is the homeowner being served with that summons and that complaint. From there, the homeowner has several rights and the timeline begins. First and foremost, the homeowner is given 90 days after being served to just reinstate, just get caught up on the payments. Plus, then you have to pay all the fees and the attorney's costs and everything. But you have the right in Illinois, after you are in foreclosure, 90 days to get caught up. Okay.
So at the very least, you could catch up and come out of that, right?
That's right. Yeah. You know, sometimes people are able to borrow from family members or friends just to come up with a little bit of a lump sum to get caught up. That's not always maybe the best decision to make, but there is that option, at least in Illinois, absolute right within 90 days just to get caught up. Also, homeowners are given the right of redemption. Redemption means basically paying off the entire balance of the loan. So first we had reinstatement is just getting caught up. Mm-hmm. Redemption is paying the whole thing off completely. And most people look at me and think I'm crazy when I say that's an option. But people have the ability to try to sell their home or to refinance, even though they may be in foreclosure. So that's the way people normally redeem. You you try to sell the home to pay off the lender and then take whatever is left over.
So you can actually go through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because you're in foreclosure absolutely does not mean that you cannot try to sell the home. That's the way a lot of people get out of foreclosure and avoid a foreclosure judgment. But even if redemption's not feasible for that person, the redemption period is a very important timeline for the foreclosure. Generally, it's going to last either 7 months from the day that homeowner received the summons or 3 months after a judgment, whichever is actually a longer period. So that's why in Illinois, in large part, our foreclosure process is so lengthy, 8 or 9 months at the very least, before the homeowner has to be out of the property.
Jesse, when you first start getting that letter, though, what's really the first thing you should do outside of the panic that you now have because you knew you missed a payment probably, unless you're really being delinquent? But I mean, if you know you're not going to make some lump sum, I mean, you're going to keep getting letters, right?
Yeah, and I tell people if you can, maybe try to set aside some money. I know that's not feasible for everybody, but set aside a little bit to maybe anticipate being able to make the payment in the future, or it gives you maybe a little bit of leverage to work with the bank and say, look, you know, I can't make this payment, but I've been able to set aside this much every month. Can we work together? And that really is really an important thing, is to work with the bank. You know, people get those letters and they are intimidating. They're kind of scary. You know, people don't want to address those issues, but I tell people the help is there, and the mortgage companies are really required to try to help people avoid foreclosure. So a lot of times these notices also come with a brief description of this program is available, please call us. And homeowners really should work with their lender as much as possible to keep the lender up to date on what the hardship is and what's going on.
So there are avenues to progress through.
Yep. Definitely straight through the lender, but there are also housing counseling agencies approved by the federal government who can help you form budgets, who can help you complete paperwork to apply for some programs with the lender. So free services available to people, and people should be proactive as much as possible.
If you simply ignore this, what are the consequences? I mean, well, obviously you're going to get your house taken away, right? I mean,
yeah.
In the most extreme case, I guess I'm talking just.
In the most extreme case, you're if you just ignore it all completely, you don't participate in the court process, you don't go to court, you don't file any documents responding to the case. The most common result of that is going to be losing the home. And like I said, even if you absolutely do nothing at all, which I don't encourage people to do, but you're going to be able to remain in the property throughout the foreclosure process, which again is a pretty lengthy process, and that's a benefit to homeowners, maybe just at least to find some place to relocate.
Because I suspect that when they first get that letter, they're thinking, I got to throw my stuff out tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm surprised sometimes, you know, by people who come in and talk with me, clients I have, who are afraid that they're going to come home from work or from somewhere and their locks are going to be changed and their stuff is going to either be on the curb or locked in their home. That's not going to happen, and at least it shouldn't happen, unless the bank thinks you've abandoned the property for some reason. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the judicial process for foreclosure allows you to stay there through the pendency of the foreclosure. And so people are oftentimes relieved just to know, hey, at least this is a lengthy process. I get lots of notices of what's happening, and I'm not going to come home and just be locked out.
And there are these avenues, of which we'll talk more here in a moment, of them and that process, you know, whether they're trying to make a lump sum in 90 days or maybe even refinancing to a degree. Mm-hmm. Jesse Hodierne is our guest, staff attorney for Prairie State Legal Services. We're talking about foreclosure. And we'll talk more after these messages on WGIL.
To ask the expert your question during Galesburg Live, call 342-9194 or email your question to WGIL at WGIL.com.
It's 8:27 here at WGIL. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. My guest is Jesse Hodierne, staff attorney for Prairie State Legal Services. We're talking about foreclosure this morning. We were talking during the break, and I just wanted Jesse to reiterate again, because we've talked this morning about the maybe 7 to 9 month period that a process in Illinois would take for that whole foreclosure, but it varies state to state. Is that why sometimes on TV you're seeing people that seem more like they just got thrown out in a very short time frame?
Yeah, the process, you know, from state to state varies. I'm not versed in some of the other states' mm-hmm. processes, but, you know, some of the anecdotal things we see on TV or the news maybe don't apply really to Illinois, because some states don't have that judicial process. In some states, it's contingent on the homeowner to actually go into court and have the process halted, which is a whole different type of burden for that homeowner. So we're pretty lucky in Illinois, and the process in Illinois has a benefit to the homeowners in making sure they are given notice at least.
Mm-hmm. You talked about an instance during the break, as we were just kind of sharing some examples of a spouse that had lost their partner to cancer, and they weren't on, like, the mortgage. Mm-hmm. What can people do to avoid that type of situation, or what happened in that circumstance, Jesse?
Well, you know, there are really three documents that homeowners need to be aware of. And the first is the title for the property. Who has a legal relationship to this house? Who owns the house? Sometimes spouses don't own the house together. So they need to be aware, first of all, do we own this together? Who's on title? And even if we own together, how do we own together? Because in some cases, if you own the home as joint tenants, then if one spouse dies, that property is going to pass to the surviving spouse automatically without probate or any other additional court processes. So really knowing about title is the first step, the first thing that's important. And then there are two other documents, the loan, the note for the loan, just indicating that this borrower owes X amount of money to this lender. That's the indebtedness. And the mortgage is really just a contract that secures repayment of that debt against the house and allows the lender to foreclose the property if the loan is not paid. Mm-hmm. So when you say I'm going to pay my mortgage, you're actually meaning I'm going to pay the loan secured by the mortgage. Mm-hmm. So homeowners need to be aware who's on all those documents with their spouse. Is it just one or the other? In cases like the one you mentioned and we had talked about, this spouse was not on the loan and her husband had passed away due to cancer, and the mortgage company just refused to speak with her because she was not a borrower. And, you know, she had explained to them that, well, you know, my husband's not available to give permission to speak with me. He's deceased. She'd even sent in death certificates, all kinds of things. In that case, they owned the property as joint tenants, and so the ownership had passed to her automatically without probate. The mortgage company still was demanding probate documents, demanding all these things that were really not available or viable for this lady to get. Eventually, I was able to assist this client sending what's called a request for information and a notice of error. These are statutory and regulatory letters that you can send to the mortgage company that they are required by law to respond to within a certain amount of time. And so with the notice of error, we explained that, you know, the husband had passed. There was no probate document necessary. They owned as joint tenants. She was the new owner, and that there are some regulations, federal regulations, that would required the mortgage company to communicate with her as if she was a borrower. Mm-hmm. She was able to get some assistance, reduce her mortgage payments, and get caught up. So
that's great. And in the case of the joint tenancy, was she on any paper then? Was she on the title but not on the other documents?
She had signed the mortgage contract, but not the loan. So she wasn't a borrower on the loan. She wasn't personally liable for that debt, but she had signed the mortgage because she was on title. She had signed the mortgage mm-hmm. really just to waive any right of homestead that she had. So, yeah.
So even, there was even documentation, but still.
Even being on the mortgage was not good enough for this lender to speak with her. And they claim all kinds of privacy, you know, issues. We can't speak with you because you're not the borrower on the account. But you know.
Jesse, can any of those be changed during the course of home ownership? In other words, if you're sitting out there thinking, who's on my title? Who's on my lender papers? I mean, what can you do to maybe prevent that from happening, even if you are already, you know, maybe you're 15 years into your mortgage?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think communication is one of the biggest things, communicating with the mortgage company. You can send them consents to allow your spouse to speak on the account or to do things for the account. So getting that on file, a physical written consent that your spouse is allowed to speak about the account is one thing. And having the affairs, I think, in place is another important thing. Just being aware of who's on the mortgage, who's on the note, who's on the title, and then being able to go forward from there. So just make sure that you're aware of who's who and who's on what documents.
Well, it falls all in line then with a will and those other important documents that should be in your files.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk more about foreclosure, the process, options that people have. Can you save your home if you still owe? Things of that nature. Jesse Hodierne from Prairie State Legal Services is our guest this morning. It's 8:33. Tyler Bachman has a look at news coming up next.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now this week's host, Terry Cavanaugh.
Good morning. It's 8:38 and about 44 degrees here at WGIL. Jesse Hodierne, staff attorney for Prairie State Legal Services, and legal help for homeowners, and in particular, foreclosure is his forte. He's been doing this for a couple of years now with Prairie State Legal Services, and that's what we're talking about this morning. The general process of foreclosure, the timeline, what it involves, and in particular, how it affects homeowners in the state of Illinois, because I guess we really have to be specific. Jesse says it varies from state to state, so we're talking about how it applies in Illinois. If by chance you have a question this morning, do feel free to give us a call here at 342-9194. Jesse will see if he can steer you in the right direction with that. If it involves foreclosure or just curious about home ownership in that regard. When I was doing a little research, Jesse, I ran across some terms. I hope you can explain. They all fall into, I think, what are some of the options for the homeowner mm-hmm. in foreclosure if they get a foreclosure notice. Mm-hmm. One of them was short sale. Mm-hmm. One of them was deed in lieu. And there was something else I ran across called strategic default. I'm not sure that you're advocating any of that. But but can you define some of those terms or talk about those options and how they would apply?
Sure. I think all three of those fall into a broad category of I don't want to keep this house. And that is an option homeowners have if they're in foreclosure. They can work with the lender to do a deed in lieu of foreclosure. The process varies slightly depending on what type of loan the homeowner has, if it's an FHA insured loan, if it's a rural development loan, if it's Fannie or Freddie Mac. You know, we hear a lot about Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So the process changes slightly based on the type of loan, but generally a deed in lieu of foreclosure is an agreement between the homeowner and the lender that the homeowner is going to just give the deed of the property, give ownership of the property to the lender instead of foreclosure. And oftentimes the lender in return agrees to let the homeowner off the hook for any of the remaining debt. Now, we always talk about everything has tax consequences. So being let off the hook for a debt you owe, cancellation of debt generally could count as taxable income for that homeowner. You know, last year Congress had extended the Mortgage Debt Relief Act to say, well, any debt canceled relating to your mortgage, we're going to say is not taxable income because we recognize that a lot of people are going through this process. Well, that expired December 31st, 2014. The IRS still has a general insolvency to exclude cancellation of debt from taxable income if the homeowner has more debt than they do assets, essentially. Then you can exempt or, you know, claim insolvency to the extent that you have more debt than you do assets. But generally speaking, a deed in lieu is just you give the house back and you walk away without any liability for the debt. Short sale is a process where you actually sell the house. I always urge people to work with a qualified realtor who knows the process of a short sale, but you work with your lender as well in that process. And the lender has the final say whether to accept any offers on your property. Essentially, you're selling the house for an amount short of what you owe. And again, you can be let off the hook for the remaining debt. Those two options are maybe not as harmful to the credit for that homeowner. And there are ways to walk away pretty much as cleanly as possible from the foreclosure.
Mm-hmm. Strategic default, though, is an entirely different animal, right?
Yeah, I don't think banks really like that term or to hear people doing that. And I don't typically, you know, think it's a good idea. Every scenario is maybe different, sure. But I've never really advised anybody that I can remember to strategically default. I think what that encompasses is the house is just so far underwater, meaning it's worth a lot less than what is owed on it. And the homeowner makes a strategic decision just to stop paying, walk away, and maybe file bankruptcy, a Chapter 7, to try to wipe off the personal liability on that debt.
If your home is in foreclosure and it's getting to the point where you are going, you're defaulting on the loan and you don't think you're going to be able to pay it, or the house is sold in a short sale, whatever those options end up being, but you end up ultimately out of that property. Mm-hmm. Or even if you are able to stay in that property, what's the effect on your credit rating that we hear so much about now, your credit rating, your credit score? What happens, Jesse?
Well, a foreclosure, by the time a foreclosure is filed, or even by the time you're 120 days delinquent on the payments, you're already being reported most likely to the credit agencies as being delinquent. And that has a significant impact, a negative impact, typically on a credit score. A foreclosure judgment, meaning that the bank has actually received a judgment in the foreclosure process, probably a little bit worse for credit than a deed in lieu or a short sale. And so sometimes that is one of the things that people weigh when they consider what option is best for them. Deed in lieu, short sale, if they want to try to protect some of that credit score, those are considerations for those two options. But a foreclosure, generally speaking, it does have a pretty significant negative impact on credit. I normally tell people, your credit is fixable. It might take you many years to bring it back to where it was. And that's not usually where I point people to have their primary focus.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question that kind of goes the opposite way. What if by chance you sell your home and you achieve more than you needed? In other words, the sale becomes a bit of an asset to you. What happens in that scenario? Who gets that money?
The bank is in no situation going to be entitled to that surplus. If you sell the home, even if you're in foreclosure and you sell that house for more than what you owe to that lender, you get to keep that surplus. That's your equity.
Is that a capital gain, though?
Well, depending on everything has tax consequences, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. But we'd have to talk to the Prairie State tax attorney about that, probably. But even if you go through the foreclosure process, part of the process is what's called a sheriff sale. And essentially, it's a public auction at the courthouse. And nine times out of 10, it's usually just the bank who's bidding on the property. But it's supposed to be a public process where there are multiple bids bidding up the value or the cost, so that potentially homeowners can have a surplus even in the foreclosure process. If, for say, a homeowner owed $50,000 on their mortgage and the house sold in the sheriff sale as part of the foreclosure for $60,000, that homeowner would be entitled to that $10,000 surplus, not the lender.
All right. We're going to pause for a moment. Jesse Hodierin, staff attorney with Prairie State Legal Services, is talking foreclosure this morning. We'll return after these messages. Our time is 8:50. It's 45 degrees, raining here in Galesburg this morning. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. My guest is Jesse Hodierin, Prairie State Legal Services staff attorney. We've been talking about foreclosure this morning and some of the, short sale, deed in lieu, strategic default, some of the names and types of processes that apply in that foreclosure process. And we'll give you some numbers at the end of the program, too, if you have any questions. Prairie State Legal Services, my understanding, you're dealing with elderly and or people who would meet the income qualifications, but there is help, regardless of that, through agencies, I think. Are there not, Jesse, that can help you in a foreclosure process?
Yeah, absolutely.
Consulting help and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I encourage people to contact Prairie State regardless of their income or their age, and we can do the screening to see whether or not they qualify for our services. And if they do, hopefully give them advice or set them up with an appointment with a staff attorney to get some additional advice and potentially some representation. But outside of Prairie State, there are other agencies. The number one in the foreclosure context that comes to mind are HUD-approved housing counselors. These housing counseling agencies are approved by the federal government to provide assistance and advice or counseling in housing-related issues, including foreclosure, foreclosure prevention. And, there are several in Peoria, the Quad Cities, Bloomington. I'm not aware of any HUD-approved housing counselors in Galesburg, but people can call an 800 number and contact HUD and be given the contact information for the closest housing counselor. The 800 number for HUD is just 800-569-4287. That number, like I said, HUD will actually put you in touch with the closest HUD-approved housing counselor if you're seeking some assistance in that regard.
Jesse, let me ask you, we've talked about that foreclosure process. Obviously, you've missed a payment after 120 days, but what are some of the reasons that you're seeing for these foreclosure processes? Because I'm sure we talked about the one couple whose spouse had died of cancer and then the house was in foreclosure, but what are some of the reasons, other reasons, though, that people might not be making a payment?
Well, almost without any exception, my clients or the people who come in and talk with me have faced some sort of hardship, whether it's just an unemployment. It could be a very temporary unemployment, but it lasted just a few months, and that was enough to get them behind. It could be a medical hardship, or it could be the death of a family member. Even outside of the household where, you know, my client maybe still was responsible for paying some death expenses, funeral costs or whatever. And those were priorities and it just got them behind. So hardships come in all kinds of types and those are the most common probably.
There's something called a balloon payment. Those have put people in arrears at times too, have they not? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. Balloon payments, we talk about the mortgage and the loan. Those documents are not always very easy for a homeowner to read. And oftentimes homeowners don't read them even at the closing because They're complicated documents. You skim through them. You're excited to buy a house, you know. But in the context of a balloon payment, what that means is that after a fairly short term, there's going to be a lump sum payment due. The loan may be for $100,000. The monthly payments may look like that loan is amortizing over a 30-year period. And actually, it's a 15-year loan. So after 15 years, you still have a big balloon payment, even though you've made all the monthly payments. Mm-hmm. That's typically what a balloon payment entails.
Yeah, and this is what put a lot of people, I thought, in 2008, mm-hmm. 9, when we were seeing a lot of the stories after the market had crashed and these balloon payments were coming due. Mm-hmm. Brings up another thing, too, called predatory lending. What is that?
Predatory lending, it's really an anomalous term. It doesn't have a strict definition, but, you know, even the government, the federal and state government, different agencies have tried to sort of avoid putting a strict definition on predatory lending. But some of the indications of predatory lending are, you know, bait and switch tactics where you're offered a certain term from the lender and then you go to close and all of a sudden your interest rate is much higher, for example, or something like that. Maybe one of the most common or the worst forms of predatory lending entails what I call asset-based lending, where the lender maybe knows this homeowner has a house already free and clear. It's a valuable asset worth $60,000 in some, you know, towns. But this homeowner maybe doesn't have the strongest ability to repay a loan based on their regular or dependable income. And so in that circumstance, the lender is lending this loan to this person not based on their ability to repay, but really based on the ability to seize that asset in the case of a default. And so that's one of the number one types of predatory lending that I've seen, asset-based lending.
In terms of foreclosure, if you lose your home in foreclosure, could you still owe money?
That is possible, yes. As part of the foreclosure process, we talked about sheriff sale and the potential mm-hmm. that the homeowner would be entitled to the surplus if there was at the sheriff sale. Unfortunately, more common is a deficiency at the sheriff sale. Mm-hmm. So the lender is not required to bid dollar for dollar what you owe on that property. And especially if the house is, you know, worth a lot less than what is owed, the homeowner may owe $100,000, but that house might only be worth $75,000. And the lender may just decide to bid $75,000 at the sheriff sale in the foreclosure, and then that homeowner is still on the hook for that $25,000 deficiency, which then the lender can sue for and collect by garnishing wages or other means. So,
mm-hmm. there's also another term in glancing at my notes again too, and that's called HARP.
Yeah,
what's that?
Well, HARP is an acronym for the Home Affordable Refinance Program. So,
is that a government?
It is. It's mm-hmm. it's a government introduced program, basically allowing homeowners in this time to take advantage of the low interest rates that are available, refinance. And my understanding is essentially HARP has some more flexible credit, guidelines to allow people to refinance now, take advantage of these low interest rates. One of the other.
So, if you thought maybe you were gonna your payments were high right now, maybe taking advantage of this program.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The upside is that maybe your monthly payments are going to be lower. Mm-hmm. The downside may be that you pay actually a little bit more over the long haul because it may extend the term of the loan.
Sure.
So it's a cost benefit analysis for the homeowner to make. But a lot of people have benefited and really taken advantage of that.
Yeah. We're going to wrap up with Jesse Hodier, and my thanks to you, Jesse, and Prairie State for discussing foreclosure here this morning. We didn't even get into some of the other housing things, but I know foreclosure is your forte, and I appreciate the information. Before we wrap up, though, please give the numbers that people can call for Prairie State Legal Services assistance.
Sure, my pleasure. So the Legal Help for Homeowners project, that project is dedicated to foreclosure prevention. We have a dedicated 800 number for people to call to apply for services, and that is 888-966-7757. You can also call just the local Galesburg office at 309-343-2141, or the Peoria office is 309-647-9831. Any of those numbers, call and go through the screening and talk to a person. We'll see if you're eligible and whether or not we can provide any assistance.
Peoria 309-674, is that right?
674-9831.
Okay, great. And the Galesburg office is 343-2141. I'll keep those numbers on hand and in case we get a call later. But Jesse, thank you so much for joining us here this morning. Jesse Hodier in Prairie State Legal Services staff attorney. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. Ask the Handyman coming up in a moment.